Well, Jim's right about one thing. I'm certainly not a preacher. I woke up this morning, or I went to bed last night knowing what I wanted to say. And I woke up this morning with a totally different mindset. Some of you guys that preach probably have done that. And I said, okay, what's my purpose for being here? My purpose for being here or being included with you guys is that I think I do have a different perspective than a lot of people in this room. And I won't say I'm the only one, but my experiences and background, my baggage, if you will, is different probably than everybody else's baggage. I know we all come with our own unique baggages. So I want to talk about how I got to be where I am. And please, this is not about me. It's not about me. But I hope you'll see where I'm going with this. I am the owner and publisher of the Gospel Advocate. My wife and I bought the company in April of last year, so we've been there 18 months now. Sometimes it feels like 18 days, sometimes it feels like 18 years, but it's been 18 months. And I think I've just now kind of gotten my feet on the ground and kind of know what's going on now. My background is not in preaching. I would describe myself as a preacher groupie. I'm not a preacher, but I have friends that do that. And so I hang out with them, and I really appreciate them. Let me say, I believe preaching is the most satisfying and the most difficult job on the planet. If you guys do it with your heart and do it right, it's very, very difficult. I appreciate and applaud each one of you that are preachers. I'm gonna come at this. I'm an HR guy by trade, a human resources guy. I'm not a preacher. I don't play one on TV. I did sleep at a Holiday Inn Express last night, but that doesn't matter. I would like to ask you a few questions, and I know you generally don't ask your audience to raise your hands, but I'm interested in this because I'm interested in studying organizations and people. How many of you guys are preachers? Okay, let me ask the negative. How many of you guys are not preachers? There's a few of us. Let me ask another question. How many of you were not born and raised in the church? Okay, I know there are a few of us here. How many of you guys are elders? How many of you serve as elders? Okay. I have a perspective that comes from growing up outside of the church. I have a perspective that is from the regular guy in the pew. I'm not from the pulpit. I have a perspective of being inside those rooms on Sunday afternoons in elders' meetings. Because I do serve, and I have served for the last 5 years or so as an elder at our congregation in Mount Juliet. Yes, I know I'm not old enough to be an elder. I know that. But I've had the privilege to serve. I think I can maybe bring a perspective that might be a little different. I know my topic is looking at support of human organizations, church support of human organizations. And we will discuss a little bit about that. What I would like to do is almost act as a mirror for us to look in the mirror at ourselves and to see where we are. You know, as I've sat here and listened, I have a respect for everybody here. I had a respect for everybody here just from the standpoint that you were willing to come and listen and talk and discuss in an open forum, questioning situation. I think that's wonderful. Last year, when the meeting occurred at the Gospel Advocate, I'd been at the Advocate for 30 days. My contribution to that meeting was merely to say, the bathrooms are over there and the drinks are over here. I don't feel like I'm worthy to add much more than that to this conference. But I would like to give you the perspective that I see as the regular guy in the pew. You know, I sit back there and I listen to argument A or speech A and argument B or speech B. And I sit back there and I go, boy, I like the way he said that. That's great. Ooh, I really like the way he said that. That's great. What I really like to do is sit back there, and I don't judge. I really don't judge. You know, God knows the heart. But he's called us to be fruit inspectors. And I see the fruits of people talking. The brother last night who got up here and spoke from his heart, you could see his heart. And does it matter what he believes? Absolutely, it matters what he believes. But why does he believe what he believes? What are his motivations behind that? That's very important. And I'm not standing up here and saying, well, the truth's relevant. I'm not. The truth is the truth. There's no... You can argue with the truth, but it doesn't matter. The truth is still the truth. One brother mentioned in our conversations about being here and differences. Last year when we were at the conference, my exposure to these differences was almost insignificant. I was not raised in the church. I'll tell you, the first time I ever heard the term anti in this context that we have here. I was visiting my wife's grandparents, and we were getting up to go to church. And she said, well, you know, we're going to an anti-church today. And I said, oh, okay. What is that? Well, we're going with my grandparents. Okay, what is this anti? I don't know what this is. Because I wasn't raised in that environment. And she said, these are people that don't have a kitchen and don't support orphans. That's my education right there. Well, we know neither one of those are not true because everybody here has a kitchen in their house. So you have a kitchen, and you do support orphans, although we know what the context is. My second exposure to this, and I don't mean, I'm not casting stones in any way, and what's the term they use now, throwing shade? Is that what the young people say? I'm not throwing shade on anybody. But I was maybe your congregations do this as well. I was born and raised in Middle Tennessee, small town, grew up out in the country. You know, went to college. I didn't go to a church-sponsored college. Went to Memphis State, paid for my education. Hey, I'm all in about that. I'll go. Come back. Anyway, I moved away to South Mississippi. I'd say a small congregation. I'd say average-sized congregation, 200 members or so. The church is very different. I don't know if any of you have spent any time in South Mississippi. The church is very different in South Mississippi than what we would be accustomed to in this part of the country or even in Nashville. We were the largest congregation, probably within a 100-mile radius, at about 200 folks. We solved problems. When people didn't get along, we fixed it. Because you couldn't get mad and leave and go over here, because there was no over here. So if you got mad, you fixed it and you worked it out. And that's what we did. But I'm a young Christian, and in a congregation like that, They're always looking for men to serve. Matter of fact, that's part of my mindset at the Gospel Advocate. What is the purpose of the Gospel Advocate? Well, the purpose I see of the Gospel Advocate is to obviously promote the gospel. But it's also to be a resource to these congregations that don't have the resources that maybe we do at Mount Juliet or some of your congregations. So in most of our congregations across the country, outside the Bible Belt, you got about 50 members. Of those 50 members, you have about three guys who are capable of teaching an adult Bible class on a good day. They work a full-time job. They don't have time to prepare because they haven't been educated in one of our Christian colleges. And so those congregations need something that they can use that will help them teach and preach the gospel. That's what we try to do at the Gospel Advocate with our curriculum. But I say that to get back to Hattiesburg. I'm a young Christian, and then like most of your congregations where you need male adults to help and to lead, I was faithful, I was committed, and I was married. The only thing I needed to be a deacon was to have kids. So as my wife and I had kids, guess what? I get to be a deacon because I'll show up and I'll do things. I was called into the elders one day, and I'd been a deacon maybe a year. I'd been a Christian maybe 3 or 4 years. And they said, we want to know what our kids are learning in Bible class. And I thought, well, you know, elders, shepherds, you should know that. And they said, no, we know what's being taught. We know what curriculum they're using. But we want a system devised such that when a child is in the third grade in school, he learns his multiplication tables. In the third grade in Bible school, he needs to learn this. I thought, well, okay. So my wife and I started working on curriculum that would sort of mirror the school system so that at each particular grade, you knew what a child was learning or memorizing or exposed to, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm the deacon over education. I'm working on this curriculum, and my wife and I put in an extreme amount of work. We got it all together. We thought it was pretty good stuff. But we needed resources. We needed teachers to teach these kids. And you guys have seen this pattern, I think. You get to a point where you've got ladies who are willing to teach the small grades. You've got men who will teach the adults. What do you do with the fifth graders? Well, we don't have a lot of people to teach the fifth graders. We'll put old so-and-so in there. My contention is, if you've got a child in the fifth grade through the ninth grade, you don't need your worst teacher. You need your best. So that being said, I said, we need help. And so this is where it's interesting, and I've heard this mentioned several times, of this gap between the I's and the N's. This Democrat-Republican aisle. You know, there's this aisle, and the Democrats all know the Democrats, and the Republicans all know the Republicans. You know, it's interesting. I hope I don't forget where I am and I come back to this. I've met some of you guys by being here. I met some of you guys last year at the Gospel Advocate. I've run into Steve here and there. Steve will wander into the Gospel Advocate every now and then. Or I ran into him at Columbus and got to spend some time with him at the winter lectures up there. But, you know, aside from that, I have never been around or had the opportunity to meet non-institutional brethren. And pardon the frankness of this, but, and I'm not... I guess I am generalizing. The cream of the crop's in this room, from what I can tell, of the non-institutional brethren. Now, I don't know. You guys know who you are. But, I mean, the president of Florida College is here. I know Steve has been very instrumental in non-institutional churches for a long time. And I'll be honest, the institutional guys, they don't even know who these guys are. And I've talked to guys who are non-institutional preachers, and I'll bring up a name that's just a very common name amongst them. I could bring up a guy's name like Dan Winkler, and they go, "Well, I've never heard of him." There's such a gap in between these personalities, and I love to see all these people in this room. I think it's awesome and wonderful. But back to my story, I'm in Hattiesburg, and I'm going, okay, I need teachers to teach these kids. And here's where my story of crossing the aisle. If I mention this book, you non-institutional guys will go, I read a book at that time by Bob and Sandra Waldron. Does that ring any bells? See, y'all, you NI guys are going, you I guys are just standing there looking at me. It was called A Generation That Knows Not God. I read the book and I go, wow, that is us. We are that generation. That Hosea 4:6 or 6:4, I don't know, I'm dyslexic. We are that generation. So I read that and I thought, man, that's a really good book. And then I found another book by Bob and Sandra Waldron that was an overview, or no, History and Geography of the Old Testament. Yeah, some of you guys are going. When people walk in the Gospel Advocate today and they say, I'm looking for a book that can, I go, come here. And I show them the History and Geography of the Bible book. And I say, every one of your teachers needs that on their shelf. So I said, I need help with teachers. I'm going to call this Bob Waldron guy and see if he'll come and help train my teachers. And I picked up the phone, and this is before the days of internet, and somehow I tracked him down, and I called him, and I said, are you the Bob Waldron that wrote these books? And he said, yes, I am. And I said, man, I am glad to talk to you. I said, I need somebody to help me train teachers. Would you be willing to do that? And you people may know Brother Waldron. I didn't know him. He was a name on a book, okay? And I thought he maybe lived in Alabama. I don't know that. And I said, would you be willing to come help me do a teacher seminar to train our teachers? And you know what his response was? And I was clueless. I mean, I was totally clueless. He said, the first thing he said is, do you have a kitchen in your building? Well, I didn't know what that meant. And I'm going, I just need somebody to help me train teachers. You know, my second thought was, are we going to have refreshments? I'm like, yeah, we'll buy some stuff. You know, I mean, what do you want? I'll get you here. But my answer was, well, yeah, we've got a kitchen. And he said, I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to help. And I said, okay, thank you. And I hung up the phone and I'm going, I don't understand. I want to shift that thought. If I can find my stuff here. And some of you guys have been up here and you can hear the pain. And you can see the scars. And it's like the brother said before, some of us experience that pain and we're never involved in that. You know, I'm a generation removed from that. Had I grown up in the church, had my parents or my grandparents been around the church at that time, maybe it would be a more personal thing to me. Because it's not personal to me doesn't make it not real. But I'm affected by that nonetheless. And not only am I affected by that, but now there are people that are walking around in their mid-20s who grew up in that congregation that we were trying to teach that have also been affected by that. And for me, there were things coming into the Gospel Advocate that I never saw coming, okay? First of all, I never saw the Gospel Advocate coming. I'm a human resources guy, okay? I cut my teeth in the corporate world in the wood products business in South Mississippi. I worked in a plywood plant. My first job in human resources, matter of fact, I was hired in human resources and I didn't even know what that was. I had a biology degree. I was hired to help them with their environmental matters, which meant every morning my job was to go out to the sewage station and hose it out. It was a glamorous job. I was just glad to have it. But human resources came with that assignment. You are the environmental safety and HR guy. Okay, great. I know something about one of those three. And the guy that hired me said, oh, don't worry about it. You'll learn it. Day one, my orientation, I walked in, a guy that looked like Tarzan. His shoulders were this wide, he's about 6'4", and his waist is about this big. Been working in a plywood plant all his life. He walks me in the office, he says, here's your office. He walks up to the desk, he pulls open a drawer, and he goes, you see all those papers? I said, yeah. He goes, when you hire somebody, you use those papers to sign them up. He closed the drawer, and he walked out of my office, and that was my orientation. Welcome to the working world. So I'm an HR guy and who found himself now the owner and publisher of the fifth oldest magazine in North America. Sort of like walking in that plywood plant. I didn't know about anti-ism. I didn't know that was part of the job. I was an HR guy for a company probably most of you have heard of, Gibson Guitars. I was their HR guy. I had responsibilities over all their operations, North America, Europe, Asia. We had 2,400 employees when I started there. When I left there, we had over 4,000. It was a big job. It had me flying all over the globe, which is the reason I'm not at Gibson anymore. But it's not as big as the job that I have now. And it certainly doesn't carry the pressure or the responsibility. Wow, you couldn't beat the price on these, could you? I got one left. You know, I look at us in this room, and I've heard, and all the stuff about the support of church human organizations by the church, it's in the book. I wrote the manuscript. Again, not a preacher, but I stumbled, bumbled, and fumbled through it. The scriptures are in there. The positions are in there. The arguments are in there. I've heard several guys mention the same scriptures that I mentioned, so I'm not going to beat us over the head with the same dead horse. But I've heard several people today and yesterday refer to Philippians 4. And I would like to refer us to Philippians 4, to a passage that we haven't talked about. And unfortunately, Our commentaries don't talk very much about this verse. Philippians 4, verse 2. And you guys know it. You probably know it better than I know it. And we'd like to do some of this exegesis. You know, I leaned over to Tim yesterday as Doug and then we're talking about exegesis and I leaned over to him and I said, "Hey, I want to know more about this extra Jesus and where do we get it?" I work a future preacher camp out in Denver every summer, and that's what one of the kids out there. We had a class on exegesis, and he's a young kid. He's probably 11 or 12 years old, and he says, "Hey, can you tell me where that class is on extra Jesus?" I'm like, "Yeah, I want to go to that class." But Philippians 4:2, Philippians talks about. I'd always heard Philippians is a book about joy. It's a book about joy. You know, joy is a key word. It shows up X times in the book of Philippians, which all that's true. There's not a lot of joy in verse 2. But depending on your translation, there's that, and I may say this wrong, and Doug, you can fix me later, that parakaleo. Paul is telling them, get it right. Straighten it out. You two ladies quit fussing. Amen. You're sucking the joy out of the church. So as we look at our situation, as we look at the spiritual Democrats or the spiritual Republicans, which one of those ladies are we? Which one are we? Because we're taking the same word that's used in Philippians 2:2 is used here in 4:2. That phronein, I think, word. Are we of the same mind? Are we of the same attitude? We've said it over and over in this room. There's so many things that we do agree on. There's so many things that we have in common. And several people have touched on it. You know, if we can't get along here, how are we going to get along later? And we should be united in the truth. Not like these ladies. You know, the book, I think the book of Philippians, I do think it's a book about joy. But I think it's about having the same mind. I believe it's about chapter 2. I believe it's about that phronein word of having the same mind, having the same attitude, being one, like Philippians 2 talks about. I think that having conferences like this bring us closer to having that same mind and that same attitude. And as the brother before said, in the unity of spirit, the bond of peace. Yeah, I kind of look at things differently maybe than a lot of people in here because I've been where you guys have been trained in the scriptures and trained in communicating and trained in the language. I've been trained to look at organizations and groups of people and see what's working, what's not working, who's in the right position, who's in the wrong position, what could we do better, who needs to move up and who needs to move out. And I see an organization here called the church that's united in some things but could be so much stronger if we were united in all things. And I know we're going to disagree and I know we're going to have differences on the way that we see these matters of expediency. I can't stand up here in 45 minutes and throw out a lot of scripture at you or have a PowerPoint that has all these scriptures. And I'm not going to change what 30, 40, 50, 60 years have ingrained in you. I understand working with organization, working with change. I'm not going to change. I'm not going to change what you think and what you feel in 45 minutes. But I hope that I can at least hold up a mirror and let you see what I see sitting back there or sitting in a pew. You know, we're looking for a football coach. Well, not officially. But we're looking for a football coach. My congregation's looking for a preacher. Our preacher up and left us and went to Fried Hardeman. Our congregation is concerned about finding a preacher. I'm not concerned about finding a preacher. I know a lot of preachers. I'm friends with a lot of preachers. I'm concerned about the Lord's church. You know, I realize that, and I think everybody in here realizes, Christ is the head of the church. And it's already been mentioned. He bought and paid for it with His own blood. But He's not going to come down here and tell us what to do. He's told us what to do. And He's given it to us to carry out that work. We've got to figure out a way that we can either all agree and be in the same mind, or agree to disagree and still be enough of the same mind to carry out that commission. There's not a man in here, I'm convinced. And I don't know that I have met every single one of you in this room, but I believe I've come real close to it. There's not a man here who wouldn't want that division repaired. Scars and all, pain and all. I hope that we can do that. I hope we can work to that. I hope we can work to that end. I think meetings like this are wonderful because it does keep it in the forefront. I know my time has been spent talking about things that don't pertain to my topic, and I apologize for that. I honestly don't know how much more I could add to the topic that hasn't already been said. I can sit back there and I can take notes on every speaker, on whatever side of the aisle they fall on a particular subject, and I think I could pick it apart. I think I could say, well, he's got a good argument, but he didn't. Or he made a really good point, but he was weak here. There's no point in that. I think the way that I know the way that in the business world we fix organizations. And I'm hoping that as a congregation, not as a congregation, but as individuals and as congregations, we can reach out and repair some of the things that are there. Our congregation's a little unique. I'm sure everybody's congregation's unique. That's kind of a Captain Obvious statement. Our congregation's unique in that we have nearly 1,200 people on a Sunday morning. as I travel in different parts of the country and I say that, people will say, well, how big is your congregation? I say, well, we're nearly 1,200. And they're, whoa, y'all must be way out there. No, we're not. We're 1,200 because a lot of people are way out there. And people have left there to come to find a place where they teach the Bible. And we try to do that. There's a lot of things that we do wrong. There's a lot of things that we do right. I'm sure you could say that about your own congregations. But elderships have unique challenges among their congregations. They have decisions to make. One of the points that I make in the manuscript, unless you're in that room, unless you're filtering the information that they're filtering through the glasses that they wear, it's difficult to tell what they did this right or they did this wrong or they should have done this or they should have done that. I serve on an eldership where there are 13 of us. The 12 other guys that serve with me are really good men. And they only want to do what's right with God. I kind of see the same thing in this room. There's 50, however many there is, 50 or so guys in this room that want to do the right thing with God. I don't ever question anybody in here's motives. From what I've seen the last day and a half, they're great. I appreciate everybody being here. I appreciate the spirit that this conference has held. I appreciate Jim and Greg and others that have gotten people together from both sides of the aisle to talk and to discuss. I appreciate being here. It's one of those things where you don't feel worthy to be here, but you're really glad you're here. And my invitation is open to you guys. Greg's always looking for a few good articles to put in the Gospel Advocate. There's a lot of guys in here that have written for the Advocate. Thank you. Thank you very much. Really. I don't know what else to say other than it's good to have been here. And whatever I can do or the Gospel Advocate can do to help you, please let me know. I'll do what I can. Thank you.
10 minutes, guys.